we're living in an age that seems to have maximised fantasy. There was a time when English departments at New Zealand universities wouldn't have stooped to study authors like Tolkien, and now you can take Game of Thrones 101. Why is winter coming? One of our fantasies is living not longer, but forever, in movies like Charlize Theron's new one, The Old Guard. The online platform Cameo is to launch a group chat feature that will allow people to pay $5 a month to join other fans for Zoom conferences with their favourite stars. I suppose a lot of people would be interested in that. People like to fantasise probably more than we all admit, and maybe more than we used to. I don't know if you've found this, but it's amazing how many people you meet who are hoping for a lotto win to transform their lives with quite a degree of seriousness. The feeling that young people especially are wasting their time playing games and engrossed with fantasy and science fiction, and of course Armageddon's on this weekend, that feeling may have diminished in the wake of Harry Potter and everything else in some classy sci-fi movies lately, but there's still that feeling among parents that lives are being frittered away. Not so, says English professor and faculty dean Esther Jones from the prestigious Clark Research University in Massachusetts. Esther is the author of Medicine and Ethics in Black Women's Speculative Fiction. She's just been in print running defense for sci-fi. She says it builds mental resilience in young readers. Hello, Esther.
Hello, how are you, Jim?
Very well, and good to talk with you. Are you a sci-fi or fantasy fan, can I ask you?
I am, and I have been since my youth. I have always been an avid reader since a very young age. I grew up in a household where my father was a middle school English teacher, and so I grew up reading a wide variety of everything that I could essentially get my hands on. So, yes, I can say unequivocally that I am a science fiction fan.
This is the question everybody always asks if they're a bit of a fan themselves. Who was your absolute favorite? Can you think back to your youth and think who absolutely entranced you?
I loved Isaac Asimov.
Ah.
I remember in middle school reading Dune, which was a revelation.
Dune was one of those books that absolutely magically wrapped itself around so many people, wasn't it? It was an astonishing creation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about sci-fi first. What do you think it does for young people that's good? You say it has a power all of its own, Esther.
Yeah, so I think about the ways in which there's just enough there in the text that we can readily recognize. We can recognize some of the tensions and challenges of everyday life, how people who are different or beings who are different are understood or not understood or misunderstood. We can begin to identify the source of that discomfort with their difference. It's made very literal. So alienness, right? In the United States, we speak of illegal aliens, right? And there's a way in which that term operates in a metaphorical sense that we all understand. I mean, obviously, people who are undocumented are human beings, but to use the word alien creates an automatic distance and difference that can be dehumanizing. It challenges us to think about that difference, as well as the similarities, such as with the figure of the alien.
And bringing that back into the realm of humans, it's easy to embrace diversity if people are more or less like ourselves. It gets harder if they are perceived as not at all like ourselves. That's the great value, accepting that, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So the moment that we can see something that appears to be radically different from ourselves, and at the same time be compelled to recognize that there is some similarity despite that radical difference, that makes it a little bit easier for us to think about differences amongst human beings.
I'm thinking back to old Star Trek episodes and such. I mean, they've often been useful and well-meaning, but fairly bland treatments along the lines of, let's be nice to aliens and welcome the diversity of the universe, without those nuances you're suggesting, which may jolt us into a welcome kind of awareness. Is it only the best science fiction that's useful for that, or do you think it all is?
Everybody's going to have their own definitions of what constitutes good science fiction versus not good science fiction. It can be challenging when the purpose of creating the television show is for popular consumption. It's not really designed to challenge us, right? you kind of go into it knowing that it serves a different purpose from perhaps literature when you go to read a science fiction novel.
Sci-fi is said to give us the telescope to look into the future with. And one thing that interests me is that, for example, 1984 was the most immediately prescient piece of sci-fi in the modern era, although, you know, there was Brave New World and Philip K. Dick and many others possibly that I don't know about. And 1984 has been quoted and quoted and quoted, and what it feared is still coming true. Universal surveillance, arguably groupthink, doublespeak. Prescience actually doesn't prevent, does it? That's interesting.
That's quite right. I'm going to borrow from Margaret Atwood. Margaret Atwood called the thing that science fiction does when it kind of takes this particular moment and extrapolates into the future about the kind of future that we might end up living in, she calls these thought experiments. I'm just taking our current reality and imagining if this goes on, what could be some possible outcomes of that? People are infinitely capable of correcting course. While some people might view science fiction as in its prescient mode as a little bit depressing, and in fact, that's why they don't like it, because it hits a little too close to home, it just likes to sound a bit of a warning.
We don't always take much notice of the warning signal, was my point. But can I ask you a question off the back of that? Because science fiction, in terms of its prescience, has been called actually the most useful literature of all. That's been argued. And The Hunger Games and Maze Runner and the Divergent series and Oblivion and all sorts have unstable societies front and centre, don't they, in the future? We can't look back and say we weren't told. We can't say we weren't warned.
Absolutely. Dystopian literatures shed a light on the ways in which perhaps not how we will become unstable, but the ways in which we already are and the way that we live our lives can change so rapidly in a matter of months, highlights how fragile our way of being was from the start. And so this, in part, I think is what science fiction does so well. It is that it points out how fragile our status quo actually is, how we can adjust perhaps to try to be more stable. We don't always do a good job, as you pointed out, of heeding those warnings. And also, how are we going to respond if it does take a turn as we find ourselves now?
Professor Esther Jones is with us. So what makes you think that young people, unless I'm misquoting you, are being inspired now to create a utopian sort of future? Because you could argue they're being depressed out of their wits. They're being told the leaders of today have no solutions for a kind of tidal wave of unrest and doom.
I'm not entirely sure that I believe that young people are poised to imagine a utopian sort of future or try to create a utopian sort of future. If you stay on the 24-hour news cycle, it would be entirely normal for anyone to feel depressed about the current circumstances. So I do believe that science fiction does offer certain habits of mind. Nothing is ever black and white, but there are all sorts of shades of gray in between, and that there are different ways of doing things from what we assumed is the norm. And we're living that right now. And we're being called to be creative, and we're being called to do things differently. And many of us are adapting to, and I'm going to use a cliche here, the new normal.
But you write that, quote, with increasing rates of anxiety, depression, and mental health issues for youth in the past two decades, it may be the case that young people, no differently from society generally, are suffering from reality overload. They've got unprecedented access to information about which they have little power to influence or change. And that goes for you and me to an extent too. But does the answer, I suppose, lie in vampires and zombies and superheroes and 50 shades of raunchy romance literature? It doesn't, presumably. I suppose I'm referring to fantasy now, not science fiction, but probably fantasy outsells. So I'm talking about the traditional criticism of fantasy, that it kind of subtracts you from a real world because you can't cope with that, and so you wallow in what are largely unhelpful realms of vampires and zombies and such. I guess that's what I'm asking, how much of it's useful.
For me, all of it is going to be about the quality of writing. And there's just as much drivel in realistic fiction as there is in science fiction and fantasy.
All right. So you've just raised an interesting point. Fantasy literature opens the door to all sorts of imaginative worlds. But you've started to talk about quality, and an awful lot is derivative. You know, how many writers have piggybacked off Tolkien? So would you advocate that you in fact find the decent material rather than everyone else who's generic?
It is certainly a place to start. I personally remember reading Lord of the Rings when I was in middle school and just absolutely falling in love with that narrative. I would say, however, that there's actually quite a bit of newer literature that's been produced since at least the 70s, and that there are regular awards that kind of help to bring attention to newer writers who are doing some really fascinating work in the world of science fiction and fantasy. Feminist science fiction started to take off. There were two main, in the United States, African-American writers who were producing science fiction at the time, Octavia Butler, Emmanuel Delaney. You have this infusion of newer writers.
We've had an African-American superhero joining that pantheon. We've had Moana from Disney. You are contributing to a new essay collection called Raced Bodies, Erased Lives, Race in Young Adult Speculative Fiction. We don't hear much in media about the race component of fantasy. So how does it help young African-Americans or young Māori and Pacific people here or any Indigenous young people? Can you explain that?
Absolutely. If people who are of color are not in those narratives, it kind of assumes that they haven't survived to make it into the future. It absolutely means something to center the experiences and to have a place for Native Indigenous people, for people of color, for Black people at the center of those texts, because it assumes at that point that you actually not only exist, but survived.
Yeah.
And the question of survival is such a key human question. It's who makes it in the end? We are living in times that can be cataclysmic, that are cataclysmic. And there are so many people who won't survive. So what does it mean for us to survive?
Yeah, let's take all these other people along with us because we're not afraid of them. Look, my last question, H.G. Wells, who was no slouch at science fiction, he thought all literature had to pass a sniff test, a relevance test. It had to be applicable one way or another to the problems of our time and postulate a way through them. And I suppose the worry is that young people are not seeing a way through now. They are resorting to ways out of having to cope with increasingly dark times, and whether this is still in the balance. I'm curious to know what you think.
I agree. Wells' articulation of that point, I absolutely 100% agree with, and it resonates in my own studies of science and fantasy. There's too much about this world that demands our attention, our engagement in really what I will call critical ways. The literature, the best literature available to us, must be applicable in some way to the problems of our time with agility and with creativity to how we're going to survive.
Thank you for your time, and very nice to talk with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim.
Professor Esther Jones.